hello, Merry Christmas. I hope Father Christmas has been good to you and you got everything you wished for on your Christmas list. We're very chuffed that we're getting to give you a little Christmas morning treat in the form of Taika Waititi talking about his new film, Next Goal Wins. Just before I get onto that, I've just actually, as you are listening to this, I'm actually recording this on the evening of the 23rd of December. And I've just come back from the cinema from watching Godzilla Minus One with my teen Japanese film. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. I mean, I've seen a lot of Godzilla films in my time, but this is something that just, I don't know, it surpasses anything I've seen. It's just absolutely exquisite and the score is extraordinary. So the film has been written and directed by Takashi Yamazaki and I am just blown away by it. Naoki Sato has done the music for this film. And if you are thinking about going to the cinema over the next couple of weeks, try and seek it out because it's definitely worth seeing on the big screen, as is the film that we're here to talk about today, Next Goal Wins. Now, it's based on a true story and Next Goal Wins stars Michael Fassbender as a football coach charged with turning around the fortunes of the American Samoan national team, widely regarded as one of the weakest in the world. Now, I first came across this story when the documentary was released quite a few years ago, actually, because I did a few Q&As with the team behind it. And so the doc came out in 2014, almost 10 years ago, and it tells the story of this football coach, Thomas Rongen. And I thought this story was brilliant and bonkers, directed by the doc anyway, was directed by Mike Brett and Steve Jamison, and they are now involved, have been involved with the story with Taika. So I was so thrilled when I heard that Taika was going to be making this film because I feel like the characters and the story really kind of warranted someone who can kind of really cross those things of comedy and drama, as we know and we love that Taika does. The film is scored by our old friend Michael Giacchino and we'll begin with his cue, Answered Prayers. Nice. The very last thing we talked about when I last did this with you, which was 4 years ago.
I was never going to do another one of these with you again.
Ever again. Didn't want to ever see me again. Next Goal Wins.
I was talking about Next Goal Wins. Yeah. Actually happened. I wasn't lying.
It was so nice because you were talking about almost like a process that you have where you'd filmed it, you'd done a rough edit and you were like, oh, I need to leave this. Hmm. And then you kind of went away and came back and went, I'm really proud of this.
Yeah.
And you should because it's brilliant.
Were we talking when I was doing
Thor?
Thor.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time, huh? 2019, I shot this. That's 4 years ago.
Wow. Best things are worth
waiting for. 4 years ago, this month, is when I started.
I felt like I was straight back into your world, from reminding me of when I watched Hunt for the Wilder People the first time.
Yep.
This brilliant thing that you do of marrying drama and comedy. And I just had such a great time at this film.
Oh, lovely. That's always been, you know, the thing I've tried to do with my films is have a balance and... And once the films are done and they come out and you watch them, you realise, oh, okay, well, I do like that. I like that tonal shift and like that balance. It's just nicer, I think, to see like a comedy with some sad bits or a drama with some jokes. That's life.
And this is your hat trick of appearances on Soundtrack. Couldn't have planned it better.
Get rid of it.
Yeah!
It is.
The doc, when did you first see the doc? What was your connection with that, with the story? Was it through the doc or did you know the story anyway?
I did not know the story. And Kathy, who produced Jojo Rabbit with me and Hunt for the Wilder People, he sent me the doc to watch. And it was exactly what I needed to see at the time. I just wanted to, I was a bit homesick and I was looking for some new project to do. And yeah, it was just the idea that it was a true story and it hit all the beats of a great sports film, even though it was true. Yeah, an underdog team down on their luck and then, you know, a really special player that they have in there, you know, Jaya. Then Thomas, the disgruntled, down on his luck coach coming in. It just had all of those elements that we're used to in other films, but just the idea that it was true was just blew me away. And also for me, I wanted to see I always want to see more Polynesians on film.
Absolutely.
And to be able to go home after doing Thor and Jojo Rabbit overseas and being out of my country and out of the Pacific for a long time, go back home and get back to my roots.
But also that entire Polynesian culture that you just... It's just rich in this film. The music in particular as well, you know, everything from... There's some really beautiful kind of, I guess, traditional music that's in there. You know, there's... apologies for my really bad pronunciation.
No, because I'll get it wrong too, because it's Samoan, it's not my language.
Now, Mati Lagona, the Five Stars and things like that in there, and also the way you use the haka in there as well, and how that bleeds into the cues and all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's kind of just rich in there as well.
Mm.
Was that, I guess, the essence of the emotional element to the film, of what you wanted to get out there of this beautiful culture that you wanted to celebrate within this film?
Yeah, and I wanted to celebrate it in a way that we... It felt authentic to Polynesians, right? So we're very self-deprecating. We like to joke and poke fun at ourselves. So there are lots of things in there. I think even still on the surface, some Western audiences, and rightly so, they should be respectful of Indigenous cultures and stuff, but I think maybe, I feel like it's they're almost too respectful now, right? Where they don't want to, sometimes people don't want to laugh at certain things. And, and this is another thing that I was trying to find the balance with, is showing really cool parts of our culture, but also poking fun at how cultures are represented on in film. And one of my favourite moments is like with us carrying Michael Fassbender down the hill, like this sort of crucible sort of scene from like a Werner Herzog film or something. You know, it's like carrying the white saviour down the hill and baptising him and rebirthing him. And we all found that really funny, just because it's like, oh, you'll see this in these arty films, you know, bullshit films where they're like, oh, yeah, it's just a beautiful like religious sort of like symbol. And we just thought, this is a really funny thing. This useless idiot is like fainted on top of the mountain that he made everyone climb, and they hit once again have to drag his ass down to wake him up. And so that sort of stuff, yeah, we find funny. And it's interesting to see whether or not people like... Because I still think it's, even though on the surface it was a bit of a joke, it's a beautiful shot. Mm-hmm. And that moment is actually really lovely. And when you do put the hymn in and you do have like the priest doing his voiceover, it starts to take on this new meaning. It starts to actually become quite beautiful and meaningful. And so now I'm conflicted. I'm like, oh man, the thing I was making fun of and now think is really cool and beautiful.
Me cry.
And,
just constantly seen, you know, Scots represented either kind of fighting or pissed is kind of like, you know, it's nice to see when you kind of have that full roundedness of people and what they're, you know, what they're all about and how beautiful they can be as well. The script is so funny, and you've worked, you know, some of those brilliant cast in this film you've worked with before. Rachel, for example, you know, that line she says where the drawing of boobs is a gateway to the real thing. And I'm like, oh, it's just proper belly laughs at moments in this script. And there's such a beautiful familiarity there with you and some of these casts. I wondered if you really encouraged them to play with the script or how that kind of worked with these characters.
Yeah, with every film, I always encourage certain people to play with the script and to go off script.
Yeah.
And some people, when I haven't worked with them before, I'm a little... nervous about, you know, their ability to, because some people often want to improvise on set and it becomes pretty clear pretty fast that they don't know how or they're not good at it. And so, you know, I'm always a little wary of saying yes to everybody. And but if I recognize they've got an ability to maneuver around that, then I can start to have fun with them. But Oscar certainly and Rachel are both really good at it. And then I guess to my surprise, it's because I'd never worked with him before, but and I'd only seen him do dramas.
Yeah.
But Michael is one of the funniest people I've met, and on screen he's hilarious and a great improviser.
Yeah. I want an Ace spin-off, please.
And so Dave Funny is one of the greatest, funniest guys I've ever met, and I've known him for maybe she's almost 30 years or something.
Wow.
And he's been in a lot of my stuff. And he's someone I just adore and want to keep working with.
I think that's kind of that's testament to how brilliantly you've written these characters, is that you want more of them. You know, there are so many of them that I go, oh, it'd be great if a spin-off of this one and that one, something, because you've given them something to really portray and to really fill out and to really inhabit. And so as a, you know, as a film fan watching it, you believe them and you're on those different journeys with them as well. It's just fantastic to watch. Really, really is. The idea of when there's something that's true, that's real, so this true story, but you want to make a feature film of it and there's a doc there as well, you still want to have your creative license of doing your thing and it's got to work. So how much do you rely on the source material and the real situations and things, and how, knowing that line to cross when it's your thing as opposed to it being the real thing?
Well, I don't think I rely too much on the source material, or at least I'm not. I sort of leave it behind a lot more on most of my stuff. Of course, with Jojo Rabbit, like, I didn't go back to the book again. I just wrote what I remembered from, the things that I really, like, took on and loved. And with the doc, I watched it a few times. I thought, okay, I know what we want from this, and I want it to feel a certain way. But in order for me to make it my own, I've got to just abandon the truth. And that, you've got to stay true to the sentiment and the feeling and what the film is actually about. It's about family, and it's about those people coming together with this common goal, which is to score a goal. And so that was the main thing, really. And then we had Mike and Steve who made the original doc, and they came down to, and they were really helpful in just terms of giving us some factual stuff about in links to things, which, again, some things just didn't fit into the movie and other things were really helpful for us. And then having Jaya as well, to give some, just some insight into her experience. But then you go into this other world where you have Kai Mana, who's playing Jaya, who's also trans and plays football and is Samoan and is Fafafine. And you're asking her there, and it's like, well, it has to be authentic to her experience in some ways. So, because she's playing, that character. And so she brought a certain thing to it as well, and said, well, this is actually what it would be like for me, like if I was doing this and, going off meds and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then the other layer to that is that documentary itself is also not the truth. Documentary is just edited bites of what you see, and even then it's not the truth what you're seeing, because people turn into characters when a camera's on them. Right now, I'm playing a character. This is not even me. And you're not getting the real me. You don't get the authentic me unless you're in my bed and married to me. And even then, is it the real me? Did she marry the real Taika? That's the question probably everyone's asking. Does my mother know the real me? Is that really my mother? Is she playing a character?
Do you know the real life?
Is full of lies, and it's us pretending to be it, to get attention and to be loved.
Fun.
And so even when you're turning a camera on something, you're not getting, and then you're editing it. I know this happened 4 weeks. It took 4 weeks, but I'll just edit this to look like it's the same day. If you watch documentaries, be careful. Be very careful with documentaries.
I am.
Documentarians. Be careful of them.
Would you ever make
watching
one?
Documentary?
Yeah.
No, I'm too lazy. It'll take forever. People, and also, you're filming stuff, not knowing why. For years, I feel like I'm filming this thing. I don't know why. Someday in like 15 years, this will become something. And then you're editing, and then you realize, oh, it wasn't even about that character, it's about this one. You've got to film them for another year. And then talk to documentarians, it fucking takes forever.
That's a no then. When you said one goal, I genuinely had a little internal guttural laugh, because that scene with Oscar, when he's walking backwards, just with the one goal.
One goal.
And it goes on just a little bit longer than you think it's going to go on, which just makes it funnier and funnier, because he's still there going back up the stairs, one goal sort of thing.
And that's also a funny part of it. It's those simple parts of a storyline which I think are really, I think they're more valuable than having a super complex storyline, which people seem to still be into. I like really simple ones where you can then have more interesting time with the characters and sort of widening the world based around a single thing. Big Trouble in Little China, not a touchstone or an influence on this film, but that main character has one goal, has one driving motivation, and that's to get his truck back. that he lost. And that's it. He doesn't care about anyone. He'll drop anyone, he'll push anyone in front of a bus just to get his truck. And that's the only reason he's on that adventure. And I think that's great.
Can we talk music?
Yeah.
Michael Giacchino, again.
Yeah.
But then around that, you've got Needle Drops.
Yep.
Tears for Fears, as we were just celebrating.
And Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton. And Sia.
Oh, Sia. Yeah.
That's a great scene, singing in the car.
Mm-hmm. Not too many Needle Drops in this one, though. Are there any more?
I've got...
I mean, there are, like, traditional...
Riff Grove, Double 99.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Tears for Fears, Dolly and Sia are the only ones I've got. But then I guess...
There's the other ones are Needle Drops because they're recorded, someone, choirs and things like that, and hymns. And
so what's the journey with that in terms of, with Michael, you know, because... There's got to be a fluidity between that, you know, into, you know, and I love how things like visually you're seeing a drum stop and then the cues, you know, there's so much synchronicity between what you see and what you hear. And the way I was mentioning earlier about, you know, the haka then goes into cues and that kind of thing as well. So this feels like a different ask again for Michael, you know, in terms of your relationship with him. And so what were the conversations that you had?
With him... The way I've worked with him before and in this film, certainly, is like asking him to figure out some sort of motif for the film or some sort of thematic thing, then creating a kind of a suite around that mm-hmm. we can, during the edit, we can pick and choose little bits, which is like higher energy, more intimate, slower moments. And then if those start feeling like they work for us, then, or we'll have other bits of, yeah, that's how everyone works, but, you know, other bits of score from another movie. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, I remember feeling this way in this movie. Let's use that. Just to try and figure out how to chisel away and shape the emotional journey that you want the audience to have. Then Mike will come back and go, well, okay, great, I can make it sound like that. I think you're wrong on that one, and blah, 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 blah. And with this one, you know, because he wanted to be... have some authenticity in the music and where it's from with all the instruments and everything. And not just be like, you know, this character coming in to tell everyone how to do their own music. And so, he got other, you know, he's got someone and other artists to come in. And,
oh, amazing.
Musicians, of course, and, to come in and sort of help shape that stuff so that, you know, so that it has, just has an authenticity to it and it has that same flavour.
Kind of, you know, the hymns and the kind of traditional Polynesian music, was that connections that you had with some
not
of
me.
Those? Or
no, I'm not a religious person. I never went to church. You know, I really did not like going to church when I was a kid. And I'm one of those people who's got a real hang-up about the church in places like the Pacific. And, of course, did bring some, I'm sure, something good. But
if nothing else, the image of Jesus and Dolly is enough.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's also another thing, like, specific to, like, those, you know, those places. Because people love Elvis, they love Dolly Parton and Jesus. So, like, you know, in the islands, it's extremely religious and, you know, church is a very big part of the communities. And if you're driving around a lot of those islands, there's churches every sort of, you know, half kilometre. You know, there's a new church. There's churches all the way up and down the coastline, all through the islands. And so all of those songs are people that, you know, the songs that all of those guys grew up with, and it's, you know, they're very common in island culture, but they're not in no way traditional. They're all Christian songs, but that has become very traditional.
Again, but that's getting to the truth of that authenticity in terms of, you know, the people that you're representing and making sure that you're being true to the reality of what they would listen to or what would be in those environments as well.
Yeah, well, I think the younger people like us would be us. would be listening to more contemporary stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like I didn't want to have too many Needle Drops in this film, and I've kind of learned to love hearing, like, the collective, this groups of people singing these hymns and singing these religious songs. So the older I get, the less cynical I am about people and about things like that, and the more accepting I am that, you know, it's like maybe there are some good things that come from from religion and from church, and and that it does bring communities together and makes them really solid, and that's what kind of unifies that team. And it is like, well, it's a big part of the culture and of the islands. It's a big part of the reason they're so tight together and, you know, look after each other.
Yeah, and are there you know, like that the Five Stars track, which is that like the equivalent of a popular music song or a folk music
song?
And
it's also like, well, I mean, there's a lot of
there's quite a few of them,
hip hop tracks as well.
I know, Shefu.
Shefu, yeah.
I saw Shefu Scribe years ago, like in...
King Kapisi, Scribe, Shefu, Lady Six. It's lots of them, yeah.
It's great to be able to bring that in, to authentically bring it into the story, isn't it?
Mm, yeah.
Because, like you say, there's kind of generational thing of those characters as well, and representing that.
Yeah, and it's also like very, like everywhere you go, like, you know, in Mexico, there's a lot of Mexican rappers and hip-hop that, you know, that, I think, and this, you know, you went there, unless you like were seeking it out or knew where to look, wouldn't get as much of a platform or the ability to be heard.
What about the Needle Drops? What about this Why the Tears for Fears track, for example?
What's that one? Everybody wants to rule the world.
Yeah.
Some of them are just uplifting. You know, then that's a great song, and like, you know, this, you can tie some of that, the, you know, the message in that song into the film. Welcome to your life. Explaining that.
No, it doesn't need it.
And
what about the See a Chandelier track? Because, like,
yeah,
it's really embarrassing.
It's also a drinking song. It's about drinking. It's not encouraging drinking, but you know, but like the idea that this guy's like constantly slamming back these bloody mini bottles of booze. And also, I just found it really funny that he had these certain songs that were his go to songs. played quite a few times, and then eventually like ended up not using these songs, but like there was a lot of enigma.
Wow.
Yeah. Is it sadness?
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
With the Gregorian monks as well. It's the
Yeah. That's
that one.
and then boom, the drums come in.
Yeah.
But I like that he's almost. His own like karaoke session in his car on his
loves,
own.
He loves music and he knows a lot of songs and he's I think he loves karaoke. But
did you get Michael to do different versions with different songs then of that?
We did get him to do, like, when he was driving, there's like different tracks and stuff that we didn't end up using. What else did we do? We got him like he did the sadness one. I think there was another. Was it one?
Oh wow,
that one, whatever that one is. I think it's Enigma as well.
It is Enigma as well, I think you're right. Absolutely.
Return to Innocence.
Wow. Surprising me today with your tears for fears. Did Michael ever say that though, in terms of kind of what felt, you know, kind of
We just like the idea that he was stuck in the 90s. And that he was stuck in the good old days, you know, when he was like good at what he did, and like so he just everything he brought with him, all his clothes, it was like he just refused to move on. And it was a big part for the character. It was like his inability to let go of the past and to move on. And yeah, so that's why I listened to this old fucking music from that I only remember from being a waiter in cafes in the '90s. And then like Ronnie Jordan, that was another one. There was a bit of US3. Did flip that DJ. Good music, but just so, like if you were there when it came out, there's something
it takes you right back.
Like,
totally.
Oh man, you're back in that.
Even the overhead projector scene, I was like on the floor laughing at that as well. The five stages of
Oh Reese. Yeah.
And Reese is just brilliant in that scene. How much of that do you write, and how much is kind of like, you know?
That bit I did write, the five stages. A lot of that stuff because I'm still trying to figure out like what the film's about and like why the characters are doing things and like so there'll be like that kind of segue, but it's around the same thing. But at the end of the film, when when Michael says, "You're not going to get your one goal, I'm out of here," and he says, "I can't win," and then Tavita says, "Then lose, but don't lose alone, just lose with us." There was something we came up with like in that moment, because we were like, what the fuck are these guys trying to say to each other, and what is the point of the film, and like what is going to convince Thomas to stay here? And the idea of like you're running away from losing, and it's like, well, just turn around and accept that we're all losers, and you don't have to be alone when
celebrate
you do it
being a loser.
Then it's like, well, it takes the pressure off. So little moments like that happen where you're like, oh, you start to understand when you're more in the moment rather than typing away on the page. And this is probably a sign of like laziness, or like, yeah, maybe I'm not a good writer, but I'm sure like really good writers would be like, no, it's always on the page. It's not for me. I'm always finding it and feeling it later.
There's some really great, there's the Pacific Ocean song in there as well.
Which I think a New Zealand band or something. Who is that? Does it say it in the soundtrack?
It doesn't, but the voice sounds really familiar.
Are you pointing because you know who it is?
No, I'm asking if it's
you. I don't know. Oh,
is it
really?
Not you?
You think it's
me? Sounds like you.
Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
Pacific Ocean. Pacific Ocean. Pacific Ocean. 90,000 miles wide. Pacific Ocean,
Pacific Ocean,
Pacific Ocean.
as well, like the song that they sing when they the welcome song from the team.
It's a kid song. It's like a silly kid song that we would do, and you know, and yeah, it was just being poking fun at this idea that like they hadn't organised anything, and you know, the big welcoming song is the one that, because I often like, especially in New Zealand, like, you know, if you're at various places and you're not from the same tribe or anything, you know, and someone says, okay, what song are we going to sing, or what's the haka are we going to do for these guests or for this one moment? And it's hard to find everyone who knows the same things all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's so often you're like, oh, do you remember that one we did when we were six? Should we just do that one? Okay. So it's really weird. So that's what I did. They did that.
And the haka?
Yeah, the sivatau is what they call it.
Is that sorry? Yeah.
No, that's right. And that is, yeah, that's one of their traditions. And that they do that before, the Samoan team does that before rugby games as well. And yeah, so again, it's just, I think it's just nice to show culture,
yeah,
whenever you can.
But for people who don't know what that is, you know, in terms of, you know,
people often think with haka from New Zealand and things like that, that it's a big, yeah, that's always, they always like, oh, it's the war dance,
yeah,
which is something you would never say. We never say war dance. Mm-hmm. It's like a, it's just again, it's a westernized idea that they would give to make it sound, yeah, to, just to give the sort of noble savages the sort of air of like, oh, they still like believe in challenging their opponent and war and like, you know,
scaring them before
stuck at the part life. Yeah. But it's just tradition, but there are hundreds of those songs and hundreds of those dances,
yeah,
and most of the time they're to honour people. And yeah, so it's actually to do something where it's like, yes, it's lay down a challenge, but it's not like, oh, we're going to kill you in a game of football. It's yeah, like, you know, it's also honouring people for turning up to this battle or to this, you know, to this challenge. So they have a lot of meaning in this, and for the most part, it's about honour.
It's lovely in the film how even there's a journey of that, you know, in terms of how that performance starts off with the team to how we see that
yeah,
at the end. That's
because
that's a kind of really little moment, but it's really powerful. And it's kind of like, oh my God, they're all on the same page. They're all there together and they're all kind of really proud. Whatever happens, happens kind of thing. That's
Well, that's another great thing as well, is like just discovering that pride. And it's not necessarily it's not Thomas that necessarily gave that to them. I think it's just the idea of them, of him kind of believing that, yeah, there's something that this team can do
when
no one's believed in them before. And some of it's just like a little thing where you're like, oh, someone turned up for us. So, you know, we can now, it gives us a little bit more pride and that we can pick ourselves up and make you, yeah.
I love as well when it's like, when you know it's a real story and you get those tiny little moments at the end of the kind of real things.
Oh, I know, and I've always loved those.
Have you?
I wasn't sure if
I
was ever going to put them in, like just the real footage and stuff. And okay, sometimes when you watch those and the person looks nothing like the person, you're like, well, how the hell was Brad Pitt playing Martin Luther King? What the hell? They look nothing alike. So, yeah, so like there's, that stuff I was like, oh, I don't know. It's also, it's like, oh, where are they now kind of things well. You're like, and then it's sort of, but
I'm so glad
I just loved seeing it because it's also, there's so many elements of the film that are true, but seem unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, like the idea of a trans player being accepted in the team and playing and helping the team win and them have never scored a goal and winning, and then like all the training practice, all the little things in the training that they were getting up to.
Yeah, they jumped over the head.
Yeah, yeah. And I think just showing some of those things that actually happened in real life and showing those characters, it just helps for people to go, oh, shit, this is real shit.
Have any of them seen the film?
Yeah, so the first people I showed were in American Samoa, and so I took the film there, me and Ian Morris and Oscar Kightley, and we went to the island and the community came in and we, you know, screened the movie, and a few of the players from the original team were there, and Jaya was there, she organised it all, so it was really cool. And it's also just like the thing you do is you have to take it back to where it came from and show the people, and yeah.
Well, you're nervous.
Hopefully get their blessing. Can you imagine that? They're like,
you're a little dance at the end.
If you share this with anyone else, we'll kill you, Tiger. Yeah,
you're not leaving the island.
Yeah.
Are you nervous in that situation?
A little bit, because it's the first time I've depicted real people in such a way, and you're just like not sure, because like, you know, I've taken liberties here and there and embellished it along the way, and it's, you know, you just never know if someone's going to be like so offended that you didn't put in this one detail that no one ever knew about, you know, or like, yeah, you know, with real life people, you can also get, it can be difficult, you know, you hear about those stories where people like completely cut themselves off from supporting something.
Yeah.
You know, after agreeing earlier on and you know, just the way they felt offended by something.
How did they respond?
They loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they loved it. It's also great seeing yourself, well, seeing your people on screen and seeing their friends and people who are in the audience on screen. And yeah, there was really cool stuff. A cool vibe there.
It's such a, you've really kind of, like, the sensual nature of it as well in terms of taking us there. You know, really, it's just, it's the colours and the, I don't know, you just kind of feel like you're really landing when he arrives there sort of thing. It's done, it's been so great. It's really, I really loved it. It's just what I needed. Thank you.
This is what everyone needs because it's, the world's a dark place, you know, most days of the week. And when we go to cinema, it's, you know, sometimes we just need, we need that escape. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we don't want to go and watch 4 hours of being in outer space. We want to see stories set on Earth with real people and actual messages of hope and, you know, and have some laughter and knowing that it's actually like, oh, this is actually kind of here around us and that people are like that and people inherently are good.
With sore cheeks after laughing so much, just the best ever. What's next? Do you know?
Next I'm going to make a depressing film about true murders. No, next I'm just developing some stuff, maybe doing a film next year. I've got a few shows coming out, so Time Bandits.
Yes.
For that's going to be on Apple.
When's that going to be? This year?
It's going to be next year probably. Okay. Interior Chinatown, which will probably be next year as well. Everything's been pushed because of these strikes.
Yeah.
And that will be on Hulu, and a few more animated things, and then back to writing now. Now that we're allowed to open our keyboards.
It's so great to chat to you.
You
Thank
too.
You so much, and for a little pre sing along as well. I'm like ready for the rest of the week now. Thanks, Taika. So great to see you. Thank
Cheers.
You so much.
From The Score to Next Goal Wins, that's Doubting Thomas by Michael Giacchino, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with the wonderful Taika Waititi. My huge thanks to Taika for taking the time to talk to me for a third time. Also to his team for setting up that interview and for also setting up the most wonderful kind of visuals for us to record it. We'll stick the interview up on our YouTube channel as well so you can see him in all his cheeky glory. Next Goal Wins is on general release in the UK as of Boxing Day, so do go and see it in the cinema. It's a real beautiful and brilliant light relief with that fantastic element of drama that Taika always brings with his comedy. If you want to hear my previous conversations with Taika about Jojo Rabbit and Thor, head to edithbowman.com or your preferred podcast provider, where it'd be lovely if you could leave us a rating and a review. Follow us on socials. We're at Soundtrackin' UK. And as I mentioned earlier, that YouTube channel, please subscribe to that. We've got loads of extra video content up there as well, and shorts and things. So we'd love it if you could subscribe and tell your friends, because we really do rely on your word of mouth. Merry Christmas. Once again, thank you so much for all your support this year. And next up, we start a new year. We start a new year of Soundtrackin' with the wonderful Sofia Coppola from one of our Everyman Soundtracking film clubs, where she's talking about her new film, Priscilla. Priscilla then is going to be in cinemas as of the 5th of January, but Sofia, our next guest on Soundtracking. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.